I'm just so delighted to be with you this morning. If you don't know me, I'm glad you're here. Thank you that you keep, and some of you keep coming back, so thank you for that too. I so appreciate it. It's just a delightful experience sharing it here with Mike, and thank you, Nelika and Leslie, just for, you know, it's a team approach, right, what we do. So thank you for all of that, and hopefully today it just will blend together. So I am delighted to be with you. What an exciting time for C3, right? All this kind of new possibilities that are happening. I got to do something with these books. They're going down.
There we go.
New possibilities happening. You have Brad leading you into some new places and eventually new space even. It's just really exciting. You're challenging each other to grow, what that might mean. It's just a great day to be together. The weather's like perfect these days. The political things have shifted a little. You know, you just start feeling like, ooh, things are possible. Things are possible. So just for a change today, instead of all that good stuff, I thought I'd just start out with something kind of depressing. You have to balance things, right? Yeah. So we're going to talk a little about the Earth and her changes and climate change. And I promise you that where we end up today won't be where we begin. But the Earth is changing. Do you know that some statistics are that every day 150 species go extinct? Now, I'm talking all species. It could be a small plant. It could be a tree. It could be little microorganisms in the ocean. It could be bugs. It can be birds, animals. 150 a day. You know, 2023 was the warmest year since global records were began. And then this year, just earlier in July, the Earth reached its hottest ever recorded temperature. Early July, and the next day we passed that, and the next day we passed that. Whew. You feeling it already? Yeah, it is getting hot. And ghost forests are forming. I didn't even know this was a thing, but along the coastlines where the sea levels are rising, whole forests become salinated and are dying. Winds have increased. Storms have intensified. These are big things that our little life has to look at. It's easy for us to get very lost and depressed, right? Because what can I do in the face of it? Well, let's think about that together today. When I first started to study shamanic practices, which is what I'm trained in and now immersed in, that was over 25 years ago already, it moved me to begin seeing the earth as sacred. I was trained as a theological institution as a minister. So what was always sacred was up here. What I thought of as spirit or God or mystery or insight and wisdom. It was all just up there, a little out of reach, but I had the tools. I could bring it in. And then when I started to study indigenous beliefs, the sacred was right here. It is just beneath my feet and all around me. Sacred is the way that the sunflower faces east in the morning and turns its face to the west with the setting sun. Sacred is, Leslie talked about the little bean plant. Sacred is this amazing little bean plant in my garden that started from one seed, and yesterday I counted 24 beans off of that one little plant, and of course I have a whole long row of them. 24 beans from one seed, and that's just its beginning. I'm gonna get over 100 beans on that one plant over the course of harvesting. That is sacred. Sacred is the hummingbird that catches my eye as it hovers on the purple butterfly bush as I write this talk, because of course I'm sitting outside. Sacred is the way the cat curls in the shade beneath my feet. Sacred is the way the chicken is lying down, spreading her wings, dusting in the sunlight. And sacred is this thing that happens at the end of my everyday. It is a song I hear from a bird as the darkness is descending. And I think, who does that? Who's still singing at the end of the day? So I did what we all do. I downloaded the app and went outside and pointed it toward the song, because it will, if you don't know this, it's like magic. Tell me who's singing in the night. And here it's the wood thrush. The wood thrush every day singing the night into being. And it is so sacred. I could spend this whole time with you just recounting all of the things in my life that bring me so much beauty, so much joy. Ultimately, it's your job to be doing and naming those things for yourself. But today, I want to introduce you to just a couple of key concepts or ideas or practices from shamanic thought that it's going to help us make this bridge to the natural world, to what's sacred around us. And I do this because nature, or Mother Earth, can be our best teacher of how to let things unfold, how to let things flow, how we have to be patient with renewal. So the first main lesson from a shamanic thought is that our human body has three energy centers. Now, if you've studied Eastern thought, you know, there's a seven chakra system. But the shamans, particularly I'm speaking of the shamans in South America, there's shamanic traditions around the world and everyone has some different beliefs. But they believe that there's three energy centers. The first is our head, how we think about everything, right? Next is our heart, how we feel toward everything. And last is our belly. It's how we act because of how we think and feel. So shamans would say that your job is to get these three in balance so that it flows, that that's the natural flow of everything. Now, the South American shamans would also say that those of us who live in North America, we're a little head heavy, right? Oh man, we think about everything and we think about it a lot. And there's no judgment in that. It's kind of a gift we have, right? That we get to live in our heads. We learn things. We value schools. We value higher education. We value books. We rely on our head knowledge. We value logic. We like to spend a lot of time with technology. Now, don't get defensive if you spend a lot of time with technology. Remember, I was just out there with my little phone gathering information. It's not about getting, you know, defensive about, oh, you know, you saying books are bad. No, not at all. It's getting a sense of a curiosity about the way that we, as North Americans, see life, the way that we get to interact with it, and what might make it harder for us to be in the flow of things. So we tend to overthink We overthink our relationships, we overthink situations, we'll create in our culture elaborate theologies and constructs to hold all these ideas. That's us, right? You agree? That's it. We do that a lot. And the other thing that we do in our culture is when we get these constructs, we bring them down to our belly and we act. We're pretty good at that, and I think you're pretty good at that, right? We take what we're worried about or we become aware of climate change, and then we're, well, what can we do about it? And then we act. So we swap out our light bulbs, which is awesome. We drive hybrid cars. We maybe grow some of our own food so that we aren't using fertilizers or pesticides. We make donations to places like the Nature Conservancy. And again, those are really great things. We don't have to be defensive about doing that. But you see what happens, right? When we jump from here to here, what have we left out? Our little hearts. And our way of, you know, addressing the world from here. What would that be like? So we just want to get curious about that, why it is that it's so hard for us, particularly, to live in our hearts. To live in our hearts, the shamans teach that it would be trusting our own wisdom, our own internal knowing that comes from our very selves. The heart is what will give us a power to flow when things aren't always going in the right way. The heart helps us create relationships of love with all species that share the planet. And I mean really love, not just like, oh, I love my garden, but I love my garden. I don't know how, it's hard to express it because it's so vital to my well-being, just to be able to fall in love with the earth. Now, there's reasons we don't do that. One of them are some old theological reasons, because as Christianity took over a lot of our thinking and our mindsets, if you were an earth lover, you were a heretic. you were not getting it quite right. You could be a martyr for being that, whatever that is. So somehow we carry that in our DNA too, this fear that if we really, really open our heart and love the earth, something might happen to us. But we're going to let go of that. We're going to think about how to fall in love with the earth. And this is where the quote from Robin Kimmerer comes in that I had printed. Pick up my book, this is really my sacred scripture these days, Braiding Sweetgrass with Robin Wall Kimmerer. I know many of you have read it, but it's always good to reread it and then reread it again, because the wisdom that she brings us is that deep indigenous thought, but also just all of that stuff that our heads love about how the world works. So she's just a wonderful bridge for us with that. She says, it's not enough to weep for our lost landscapes. We have to put our hands in the earth to make ourselves whole again. Even a wounded world is feeding us. Even a wounded world holds us, giving us moments of wonder and joy. I choose joy over despair, not because I have my head in the sand, but because joy is what the earth gives me daily, and I must return the gift. Isn't that beautiful? Oh, I choose joy over despair because joy is what the earth gives me daily. And I must return it. Joy is based in the heart. It is based right in there with love. It is based right in the heart with compassion. So we have to tend our hearts, heal our hearts, if we have any hope of healing this wounded world. So how do we do that?
Next book.
We do it through a teaching called reciprocity. Now, reciprocity is not a word used often in our language, but the shamans in South America, you'd hear it 100 million times a day where they're speaking about reciprocity, that you can't take something without also giving something. You can't expect something without also knowing what you will offer in return. It is a hard concept for us because we suffer a bit because we're in a consumer society. So you know what we're used to offering? A little money, and then we get what we need. And we've become a bit of a grumpy society, as far as I can tell, because everybody's complaining about everything. Like, I try to call the phone company, I'm on the line for 30 minutes just waiting, you know, because I've paid for this service, I should have this in return. And we do that in restaurants. People get so grumpy. So try to be a little less grumpy. That would be a good start. Because it's only one exchange. You're just exchanging money. What does that even mean, money? I don't know. Not much, a little, it's important. But it's only one method of exchange. And it is a method that keeps us a little stuck in our heads, actually. So reciprocity, true reciprocity from our heart, means that we create some different habits of connection with every species, every creature, and the earth herself. So for this, I'm drawing on the teachings of Don Alberto Taxo, who is a shaman in Ecuador, who I had a chance to meet. Unfortunately, he passed away from COVID, but his writings had been captured by one of his students. And I just find his approach to be so, so helpful. He says that everybody can connect and help to heal ourselves and the earth just by beginning a practice of connection every day. So, for instance, and he says, oh, it doesn't require a book. You don't need the 10 steps toward a more connected soul. Though a book is fine, he would say. You just get out and do it. You just begin cultivating habits of connection. So he says, for instance, you're in the shower every day, give thanks to the water. Just be amazed that you have hot water pouring on your head. And where did it come from? Where's it going? Start to get curious about all of those things because it will make you more connected to your earth. Where does your water come from? Where does it go? What is the source? Get curious. And by doing so, you'll create a habit of connection just by being grateful in the shower. He also suggests another place we can connect is around our food. Right? Giving thanks for our food, being grateful. Now, this was a bit of a problem for me when I made a shift from praying at every meal. And you probably know some of those rote prayers that we all said at meals, to really being thankful for my food. So there was a period of time where I just didn't do it. I'm like, I don't know how to pray over my food. But then it just became clear that when I looked at what's on my plate, I give thanks. Now, I'm on a farm, and we raise a lot of our food, and we raise meat that we eat. So, of course, I'm extremely grateful that I get to caretake the animals that now caretake me. Oh, it some days can break my heart, but it's a good heartbreaking, right? I'm not just jumping from here to here. I'm feeling what it's like to be in that interconnected web. I thank the plants who are nourishing me. And if I didn't grow it, I'm also thanking those people who did, because they worked hard. Whoever they are, they planted, picked, packaged, so that I can eat delicious greens all winter. I'm just so grateful. So making that shift of figuring out how you can build in that gratitude. He says simple things too, like in their culture, they take offerings to beautiful places in nature. So I happened to be there over the solstice, and that happens to be a time when a lot of people travel to their water sources with little gifts. Now, what do you bring a waterfall? So what they bring is they, from their yard, gather plants that to them are just sweet and smell so good. So maybe it's a flower and some lemon balm. And they take their little bundles of sacred, beautiful things to the waterfall. And I mean, you can't just get to the waterfall by pulling in a parking lot. You got to take a little hike to get there. So I'm hiking down the path with all these people with these big bundles of beautiful things. We get to the waterfall. Everybody's just gathered. They gather themselves around the base of where the waterfall comes down, and people are just being grateful. They're placing beautiful flowers into the water. They're together as families doing this beautiful thing because it's how they live from their heart. So if you're going to the beach later today, go in your garden, clip a little flower, take it, see what that feels like to develop that habit of connection. Just knowing that the lake, I love the lake in summer, it gifts me so many things. What can I gift it in return? And start to become conscious of that exchange. Reciprocity. Reciprocity. The lake gives me so much beauty and joy. Let me give you a bit of beauty in return. And believe me, nobody's going to yell at you if you float a flower on the water. You know, compared to if you're leaving trash there, which I know you wouldn't because you're all very conscious. So developing these habits of connection. For me, it also, I'm going to come back to the green beans one more time. I'm out there picking green beans yesterday. I'm counting how many beans there are because I just think that's so fascinating. And you can bet that the whole time I'm picking that row of green beans, I'm giving gratitude. I'm telling the plants, you are amazing. I wish I could do this from one little seed. I don't even know how you do it. And I'm just talking to them, and sometimes I'm singing to them. Now, I know that might be a little woo-woo, there goes Ruth. But trust me, when I say it heals your heart, it makes you fall in love with green beans in a way you never had before. And it is a way to be in this world that the world needs us to be. So we do it bit by bit, developing these habits of connection, returning to reciprocity. But even then, we're still left with the fact that the earth herself is changing. And it's because of us, not necessarily us directly, but it's progress, right? It's the way things are in our world. So now I come back to Robin Kimmerer one more time. She has a chapter that's called The Sacred and the Superfund. And she talks about Onondaga Lake, which is near Syracuse, New York, a lake that has become so polluted and has around it now 9 Superfund sites. And what that simply means is that there are 9 places that the Environmental Protection Agency has had to go in and say something needs to happen here, and they call those a Superfund site. So around one lake, there are 9 of them. It is a heartbreaking story, and I understand why we bypass it, right? Because it's heartbreaking to hear how it now, if you were to walk along the edges of some of that lake, it's thick like white glue, sticky, and extremely toxic. It's heartbreaking to know that when you kind of look in the distance and see what looks like stone cliffs, those are sheer walls of waste. It is heartbreaking that the land around the lake is buried under 60 feet of industrial waste that was sludged in. I get why we don't go to our heart. It is heartbreaking. There's no swimming, no fishing. The beauty was destroyed. But there's some good news. Nature gives us the good news. It's slow. So the chemical plants, as you probably know, that's what a Superfund site is, they're required to do some restoration now, you know, after the damage has been done. But even that is a very slow process, and often more time is spent in legal courts than actually out in nature doing the restoration. And the solutions will never restore the earth to what she was. It might fix some stuff or help, but it's an extremely slow process. But Kimmerer says that restoring the land is only part of what has to happen. It's restoring our sacred relationship to the earth. So she begins to paint a picture of what it looks like at Lake Onondaga. First, there are some brave trees that are managing to replant themselves. Not all of them, most of them die, but there are these brave trees, and they begin to change the soil, rebuilding the nutrients. There are ants that grain by grain are changing the soil. They carry the waste up. They bring bits of leaves down. There are shrubs that are beginning to grow beneath the trees that are managing to survive. Many of these shrubs are things like blackberries, which then bring the birds back, because they have something to eat, and eventually bring the deer back as they return, creating a whole another ecosystem. You know, the land will never be restored to what it was 200 years ago, but it does renew. That's the nature of nature. It's always living, always dying, always growing, always releasing, always changing. Nature does what it does. And you and I, we're just called to move forward with our hearts a little more open, balancing our heads and our bellies with our hearts, developing practices of reciprocity and connection, letting nature be the one that teaches us how to flow, how to change, how to let go.